Okay, it's Friday. We're back to business as usual after our 100th episode.
Yeah, we're going to do this one sober.
Yeah, it's very early in the morning, yeah. So that's why.
It's actually just a movie review. We're going to do The Running Man. I haven't seen The Running Man really since I was in my probably late teens.
Yeah, same.
I hadn't seen it for a long time. I got it on DVD because the Blu-rays were so expensive on this one. I couldn't find a good
deal. I wonder why.
I don't know. It's almost a forgotten movie.
It is kind of. It's like one of the ones that doesn't really get brought up a lot in the Arnold Schwarzenegger canon.
Yeah. I remember, I really liked it when I was young, you know, so I went back and watched it again, and I kind of expected it to be pretty bad. No, it was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
It's a lot better than I remember.
It's like super cheesy in that over-the-top 80s kind of way.
But that's the tone.
Yeah, that's kind of what you want from like an 80s sort of action movie.
And Arnold's really good at that. That's, you know, he was a specialist at kind of a fun, goofy tone to it. It's almost kind of like mythological. It's not supposed to be, you know, real.
Yeah.
But behind the movie, you know, there's a lot of themes that turned out to kind of come true. And it kind of foresaw the rise of reality TV. You know, things like Survivor and American Gladiator. I think actually American Gladiator was a ripoff of.
I think American Gladiators pretty much straight up took the idea from this movie.
And, you know, and Richard Dawson, you know, and some of his lines in the movie foresaw a time when the government would use kind of like state-run media to propagandize people and to control them. And that kind of, not only did it kind of come to pass, that had been going on. It's just that we didn't know about it until.
Well, there have been other movies like this kind of. You know, it's basically your straight up 80s dystopia kind of movie. They had like Death Race and, you know.
Exactly.
Battle Royale and that kind of stuff.
It was in that same vein, yeah.
Yeah. So this is, think of this as kind of like an 80s version of like The Hunger Games or something. It's a similar kind of theme.
Yeah, the Hunger Games is definitely a ripoff of this.
Yeah, but like I said, there's a lot of, there's a whole subgenre of dystopian fiction which this kind of comes from.
And because this is based on a Stephen King book that he wrote under a pseudonym, it's suitable for the show. So we're going to go ahead and do this one.
Yeah, because it's like an action movie. It's also kind of like a horror movie.
Kind of, yeah.
This is one that I saw. The film came out in 1987. And this was one that I saw a lot, like back in the late 80s, because it was on, I had it on VHS. They used to play it on cable like all the time. And I remember really digging it. Like I said, it's sort of an action. It's mostly an action movie. It has a little bit of sci-fi horror crossover. There's some gore in it, which I liked. But then there's kind
of... Not much, though.
Not a lot. I mean, that dude's head blowing up and stuff. That was kind of neat.
Yeah.
But most of the gore is kind of
implied.
And
that was kind of a long shot. It was far away. It was actually... That was real.
That was my favorite shot.
It looked real. That dude
really did.
His head went pop like that.
And I was like, whoa!
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
That is like my favorite. Because as you said, when we were watching it, because this was made in 1987, right?
Yeah.
It's like, but it looked like his head blew up while he was running.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how did they do that?
I don't know. He must have been hunched over and they had a
blew that dude's head up. That's what it was.
They had a fake upper torso on that guy.
Sorry, Chico. That was the character's name.
Just the way they edited it, you know, so quickly, it was hard to tell exactly what happened. But it did look like a...
It really did look like a guy was running and then his head exploded.
Yeah, and they got a lot of kind of like an all-star cast. If you've been around for a long time, you see the guy from Alien is in it. The black guy, what's his name, you know? Well, hey, why don't they freeze him? Why don't they freeze him? Why ain't they gonna freeze him? What was that character's name? I forgot. Doesn't matter. But that guy's in it. Richard Dawson's in it, which was...
He was the best. Richard Dawson was the best part.
He can act. He
was the most inspired casting choice, probably of all 80s action movies. Because for those of you that are too young to remember, Richard Dawson was an actual game show host, very famous for hosting Family Feud back in the day.
And it was awesome. Because...
And he was kind of a sleazy drunk.
Yeah. It was awesome. His career went way back into the 70s.
Yeah.
I'd be a little kid and I'd watch Dawson. And Hollywood at that time would pump out all these game shows like Joker's Wild and Liar's Club and, you know, Hollywood Squares.
God, I love those.
Yeah, they were cool, you know. and it was just the regulars, celebrities. And some of these people were just famous for being famous. They were just celebrities. And they would just be on these game shows. And they didn't have normal jobs, of course, and they would probably film fucking 7 or 8 of those episodes a day, and they'd probably do them all in about a month period and make a bunch of cash. And you could tell that they got sick of working all day and all night long because they were loaded. And then you could see them reaching down to grab a drink and drink.
Yeah, they'd get
and put
like significantly
back.
Drunker. They were just kind of like we do, but
it was hilarious. And some of them were really good. And Dawson was a host on some of them. And one of them was Family Feud.
Yeah.
And I remember being a kid, him just be loaded, putting the moves on people's wives.
Oh, for real.
And people's daughters in the middle of Family Feud. And there was a couple times I could have swore he reached down and grabbed some ass.
I'm sure he did. It wouldn't
shock
me.
But you really couldn't tell. You couldn't see it because it was kind of a close-up. You could see his shoulder kind of dip down. And then the woman's face turn all red. And he'd be like looking in the camera because, you know, baby, you know. And he's got the... And I think he'd have a drink in his hand at times, didn't he?
Oh, when I don't remember if he did or not.
Or he would just look like he had it. He should have had a drink in his hand.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is.
Hidden behind that little pulpit thing that he had.
That little fucking flask that back little, there.
It wasn't a pulpit. A little is that what you
Yeah, it was like a little podium.
Podium, that's what I
thing.
Meant. It's like a little podium. I think he had a drink in there.
He probably did. There was like a little shelf.
And you can go on YouTube and look up The Liars Club, and that was such a good
Yeah, we
show.
Watched a bunch of those on YouTube.
And you could just tell, you know.
And Joker's Wild. I love Joker's Wild.
Yeah, it was good too. But Liars Club, and you can see old episodes of that on YouTube. And ones with Buddy Hackett, the dude is just snockered. He's just loaded.
Oh, yeah.
And what with Larry Hagman. Wasn't Larry Hagman
on
there?
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think he was.
It was the blonde guy from Hogan's Hero. That wasn't Larry Hagman.
Oh, shit. What was that dude's name?
Yeah. But, you know, he was in there and he would just be just trashed.
Yeah.
And that was a fun game because they would hand over a mysterious object and they would lie their asses off to explain what that object was. And the contestants had to figure out who was telling the truth.
Who was telling the truth and who was lying.
Yeah, and who was lying.
That was a funny ass show.
Yeah, you had to bet.
It's still funny.
It's fucking awesome. And they could,
I think.
Yeah, what was funny is you could tell that it was happening in like a dingy kind of 1970s Hollywood studio that wasn't much bigger than a garage. It probably was a garage, like
probably.
A 2-car garage. It was funny.
But yeah, so I was going to say that, like, you know, we went off on that digression
yeah.
to just to say that they cast Richard Dawson, who was an actual game show host,
yeah.
and they put him in this. To be a game show host, like the sleaziest sleazebag evil game show. So he's basically playing
himself,
an evil version of himself. Just like a slightly more evil version of himself. And he is amazing. He is like the best part of this fucking movie.
Yeah. And what it is his show basically has government contracts to publicly execute enemies of the state before a live audience. There's cameras everywhere. And they have kind of a dystopian area of the city. I think they said, what was it, 200 city squares?
Something like that. Yeah, that's like the game zone or the game arena.
Yeah, with a bunch of cameras. And they have a bunch of people working in there, you know, with colorful armor and motorcycles, you know, dirt bikes to chase people along certain routes. And then they have these things called stalkers who are like these celebrity killers. They're kind of like, each one of them kind of has their own name and their own equipment, and they run the stalkers down and try to kill them.
They got names like Sub-Zero, Buzzsaw,
Dynamo. Yeah.
Who sings opera.
Yeah. And, you know, Jesse the Body Ventura was one of them. What was it?
He's like a retired one.
Yeah.
He's Captain Freedom, I think is his name.
It was kind of like Captain America. Captain Freedom.
He had hair in this movie.
Yeah.
It was weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's actually not in it a great deal.
No.
He's like turned up at the beginning like in an aerobics workout video.
Yeah, it's funny.
And
he's
then later
as
on.
As gay as he possibly can with the aerobics. Remember that?
Seriously,
He's trying to look like Captain America and Richard Simmons had a love child.
It is exactly like that.
Yeah, that's what they were spoofing. I remember at the time because I saw this in a theater. When it came out, and I was going,
I might have seen it in the theater too. Now that I'm thinking about it,
you know, me and my buddies would laugh, and you know, the guy just like Richard Simmons, you know, you got Jesse the Body acting like Richard Simmons, you know. It's funny.
The whole premise of this movie, it's actually set in
2019.
Part of
it is.
Well, I think the beginning is 2017.
2017.
But then Ben Richards, who is Arnold Schwarzenegger's character, he gets pretty much framed for a crime. Like they use some creative editing to make it look like he killed a bunch of people.
Yeah. Which that's kind of one of the narratives of the movie is that they're showing you how easy it is to manipulate the audience by editing things to create a narrative. And in my deluxe DVD version of this, they actually have like some extras on there about the show Survivor and the people that actually made the show Survivor and how reality TV really isn't real. they would film people doing all kinds of stuff, and they would tell them to act out, and then they would edit it in a certain way to make any kind of narrative that they wanted.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's been a few documentaries out about this, about how, I mean, obviously everybody knows now that reality TV is bullshit. It's like, yeah. You know what I mean? They can edit it to make whatever you want.
It's just as fake TV.
Well, and honestly, most of the people, other than a couple of the early reality TV shows when it wasn't really that big of a genre, later on, you got people that were looking to make a big break. So all the people on there that were trying out for the show were actors or actress, struggling yeah. actors and actresses. And, you know, they wanted to get famous. They're just like, oh, well, I'll be on a reality show and then I'll yeah. get famous. And so a lot of them are already, so they're already playing a character. The reality show producers are like, well, we need a person that does this and a person, we need a bitch, we need a villain, we need right. this, that, and the other. So they cast for particular personality types. And then they've done things like liquoring people up. They tell people lies about other people on the show.
Yeah,
so,
they said this. They
yeah,
said
so
that.
They get them to conflict. It's the same thing they do in the green room of like Jerry Springer and stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
hey, this person said you were fat. So yeah. like when they come
same
out.
Thing, same thing. Yeah. Same thing they do in goth clubs worldwide.
So then when they come out on stage, yeah. they're like, fuck you. Blah, yeah. blah, blah, you know
yeah,
what I mean?
That bitch so said about you.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So this movie kind of predicted that, but. I mean, the book came first, obviously. This yeah. one is much more based around... This movie, I have to say, is 80s as fuck.
Yeah, yeah.
The clothes are 80s
awesome.
As fuck. They have, like, yeah. the Running Man game
yeah.
show actually has, like, a bunch of, like, solid gold dancers and, like, fucking
movie,
shiny workout gear
this movie
and
is,
everything.
This movie is a hipster's paradise. A hipster would love this shit. And you know what's funny is that I saw comments and some reviews, like on Rotten Tomatoes, about how cheesy and fake looking the sets were, and I was like, no, that was just 80s. That's
yeah,
the
that's
way
just
things
what everything looked.
That's
like.
What everything looked like. That wherever you went, that's how cheap and cheesy a lot of shit.
Yeah,
because
everything was cheap as shit.
It was
well,
made
that's
out,
I mean.
Made
like,
out of crappy stuff, and everything was painted crappy, and that's
yeah,
just the way the '80s were.
It's 80s as fuck. But in yeah. a way, that kind of works because it kind of goes with the whole. I mean, you're watching what is supposed to be a TV game show.
Yeah, in 2019.
In 2019.
In a dystopia. In a dystopia.
But yeah, like I said, it's like the whole fucking, everybody's like in workout gear and stuff. It's the craziest thing. And then, you know, there's the whole thing with Arnold Schwarzenegger's like really groan-worthy one-liners, like after he
yeah.
kills some of the stalkers and
yeah.
stuff like that. Like,
yeah.
you know, he cuts a guy in half and then he's like, oh, he had to split. You know what
yeah,
I mean? And I'm like, wah, wah, wah.
But
in
was,
a way,
that
that's kind of awesome.
That was the genre. That,
right.
that was the genre, and that's what the audience wanted at the time. Like, I saw this in the theater, and I was in my late teens. It hit the spot. This is exactly what we wanted to see at that time.
Yeah.
So this was a well-made movie, well-written for the time. Younger people, they see these movies very much out of context. The cultural context is very different. All right. Boy, that's cheesy. Like, no, we loved that.
Yeah.
We loved that back in those days.
But I think
I still do.
But I think the cheesiness is part of its charm.
It was all on purpose.
I mean, and shit, man.
It was
like,
all on purpose.
Fucking Dweezil Zappa is in this, playing
yeah.
like a revolutionary with a beret and everything.
Yeah.
And also Mick Fleetwood is in this as the leader of the resistance.
Yeah.
Well, sure. and this is something I love about 80s movies. And like you said, I think the reason, and I think you said this, the reason you like a lot of 80s movies is because of their optimism and stuff
yeah.
like that. The thing that's awesome about a lot of these 80s, particularly like 80s dystopian movies,
yeah.
it's like all we have to do yeah. is hack into the TV's network and tell them
the truth.
Tell them the truth and everything will get better.
Yeah.
And I'm like, aw, that's
yeah.
so cute that
cute
you think
idea.
That.
Yeah.
That's so cute that you think anything's going to change.
Right.
It's not just by like, yay, we did it. You know what I mean? But yeah. That's kind of a cool thing about it, though.
The idea of an 80s movies was you had kind of like, especially Arnold Schwarzenegger, he was an epitome of it. You had kind of an idealized, heroic character.
Yeah.
You had a diverse cast trying to get through. And this, I think it's hilarious today. They're always talking about diversity in films. These films were always diverse. You can go back a long time and you could see diversity. You didn't really have to force it. They just did that automatically back then. Anyway, you have a diverse cast that goes through all this hardship. They resolve the conflict. Everything's good. And the movie ends on this high note. So when you left the theater, you would walk out into the night or the daylight, depending on what time you saw the theater, which is an experience I think a lot of young people really don't do anymore, which is going to theaters. You come out and you had an optimistic feeling. And you got in your car and you drove around. Boy, that was great.
We can do it!
We can do it, man. Yeah. it was almost kind of like a pseudo-religious experience, actually, coming out of the theater, being in the theater and coming out.
Yeah.
Kind of like coming out of a church.
It kind of, and actually this just occurred to me, but this sort of like the ending of this kind of reminds me of the ending of They Live, where it's just kind of like,
yeah,
you know, we took over the TV station, yeah, and you know, we told the world everything and all this other
stuff. There
kind
was
of
that stuff. Theme happening over and over again.
Yeah, that happened a lot in 80s movies. Like I said, particularly 80s dystopias. You know,
it was 80s as fuck to have a positive, uplifting end to the movie. There wasn't any of that like subversion of expectations, any of that postmodernism really in the endings. They were very traditional and they were kind of uplifting at the end.
Yeah, they definitely had a formula, particularly action movies, because I think they went into it knowing what to expect. And if you tried to do something different, everybody would be like, that sucked.
Fuck that. Yeah, looking back on it, you know, with the whole theater culture and growing up in it, I really do think it was a pseudo-religious experience that we were having.
Kind of
what ancient people and kind of backwards people have, the feeling that they get when they go to church. Going to church and singing songs. I don't want to call them backwards people, but you know.
The interesting thing about this is it was actually
old-fashioned people. I guess
I want to say too that the score of this was done by Harold Faltermeyer, the same guy that wrote Axel F. for Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah.
And it shows.
Yeah, the music's good in it.
Also, I think the ending theme song, like the super cheesy.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
That was actually
a metal song, wasn't it?
Well, that was actually done by John Parr, and I think that was the same guy that did the St. Elmo's Fire theme song, right? Because remember, that was like a big hit in like 1985, that song, and it was like, that song is also 80s as fuck, with the hair and everything. But this was directed by Paul Michael Glaser, and interestingly, he was like the first guy that was supposed to do it, then they fired him, and then they put another guy on it, and then they put Michael Glaser back on. And actually Arnold Schwarzenegger has gone on record as saying that he didn't like that guy's direction. He thought he kind of messed it up. He's like, he made it look too much like a made for TV movie. Like it was, I mean, the direction is very, I've heard it called workmanlike.
Yeah.
It's competent, but there's nothing flashy about it.
No.
You know, and some of the shots, I don't like the way they edited some of the fights between the heroes and the stalkers.
Yeah, real simplistic.
They were very dark. They were, you know, far away and like not real artfully done, I guess.
Yeah, the actual action of the fights themselves wasn't the centerpiece of this movie.
Not really.
That's not what they were trying to do. It was more of what was happening with the studio audience. It was more plot driven. It wasn't so much action driven.
Another thing that I love about this movie too is that every time they show shots of like the audience, whether it's like all the poor people in the street watching it on the big screens, or whether it's this like the crazy old people like in the audience watching it, they are all super fucking jazzed for this show. Yeah. And it's like, I wondered if they told them, they said, act like those idiots on Let's Make a Deal.
Yeah.
Or like everything is like way over the top. Way too excited about everything.
That's exactly what they told them.
I think that's what they told them to do, because that's what they're actually like, fuck it. They're just like really like that, and it's very, very funny.
Yeah, there's a bunch of matte shots in this too that establishes the world as being basically the same world as Blade Runner.
Yeah.
It was
except not quite as cool looking.
But it was trying to be like the old Blade Runner when you looked at the skyline, you know, like the big Tyrell Corporation building, you know. You can kind of see buildings that look like that in the background of the skyline. It's pretty cool.
But another thing too is that, and I wanted to get a little bit into the differences between the movie and the book. I mean, the movie, it has the same basic premise as in a game show where you go on and then people hunt you and kill you. But that's about it. That's pretty much the only things that are similar. The book, which was written, I think, in 1982, written by Stephen King under his Richard Bachman pseudonym. The book is actually has a much larger scope. Yeah. Now, in the book, Ben Richards is nothing like Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's like a reedy, skinny, like everyman.
They have one of those in the movie, but his old sidekick.
Yeah, he's like a geeky character. He was the one that had to figure out, you know, the computer stuff because
computers and stuff.
Yeah, you know how that goes in the 80s. They had to be skinny with little glasses and stuff. He's like, computer nerd is this character type. But yeah, the character of Ben Richards in the book is very much like that. And he's actually not a criminal. And the show, it's government owned, the TV station, but they don't have a thing where it's like, oh, we put criminals on there to execute them. It's pretty much anyone. It's volunteer is what it is, because it's a huge prize. So it's actually more like real reality TV.
Yeah.
So the main character is really poor. He has a wife and kid in the book, and he volunteers to be on the show because if you win, no one's ever won, you get $1 billion.
Yeah.
But you still get $100 for every hour that you stay alive, yeah, and $100 for every cop or stalker, they call them hunters in the book,
yeah,
that you kill.
Okay.
So he's basically volunteers to be on the show because he's broke as shit,
right,
and he's starving and his family is starving. And he's like, okay, well, I'm going to be on this show. And hopefully he's like, I know I'm probably not going to win, but I'm hoping to accumulate enough money so that his wife and kid can live. So there's no element of like criminality or anything. And the different thing too, is that in the book, there is no game arena.
Right.
You can go anywhere.
Right.
But there are hunters everywhere. They're basically hitmen. They're not like, you know, gladiators. They don't have like wacky costumes or anything like that.
Yeah, these have wacky costumes.
Yeah, they're just hitmen. And also, just regular people who see you can get rewards if they tell people where you are.
Gotcha.
So you pretty much have to go everywhere in disguise and shit like that. I don't know, should I spoil the ending of the book?
The book? No, don't spoil anything.
Okay.
It ends
very, very differently than how the movie ends.
In the movie, Arnold Schwarzenegger is not a criminal, though. He's actually a hero they made look like a criminal.
Yeah.
He was a military chopper pilot, some kind of an attack chopper pilot, and he and his flight group were ordered to go out and suppress a food riot, and he refused to open up on unarmed civilians down there. So his own crew attacked him and arrested him, and they basically sold him off through like government contracts to the Running Man show, and they re-edited the video footage to make it look like Arnold Schwarzenegger opened up on the food riot crowd without orders. And they kind of show in the movie how you can edit video to change a narrative to make it look like Arnold Schwarzenegger's character was disobeying orders and opening up on the crowd without permission, which was quite cool the way they did that. There's a lot of stuff in the movie that kind of came to pass in a certain way, like Arnold Schwarzenegger buys a airline ticket over a computer in a woman's house. It looks like web TV. It looks very primitive by today's standards. But I remember seeing that as a kid going, damn, he bought an airline ticket off of a computer inside
his
house.
Holy shit. It is the future.
Yeah, I was like, man, that's some futuristic shit. You know, it's funny because you look at a lot of the themes and a lot of the stuff that happens in Running Man, and it's supposed to be 2019, and that time has come and gone, you know, like the dominance of cable television is kind of ebbing right now, and you know, there's no mention of anything like an internet or a YouTube.
Yeah, really, I don't really know if any movies predicted that.
Nobody predicted the internet.
And nobody, or cell phones or anything.
Yeah.
Not really.
Oh, yeah, you know what?
Well,
could say Dick Tracy's phone watch was a cell phone with Skype on it, because in certain
that's true.
So you know, that idea was kind of there, but that was usually something that was kind of radio / TV powered.
Yeah,
not really something that came with with an internet. The whole idea of an internet, really, I didn't see any movies.
The closest thing that I ever read, and this was in a book,
maybe
actually.
Tron.
Yeah, the kinda. Closest thing I ever read in a book that came out, and I can't remember when the book came out, was Ender's Game.
Yeah.
Well, I read the book, and I think the book came out in the late 60s, and it described something very much like an internet. Like, people were uploading, you know, papers to essentially the cloud so other people could read it and stuff. That was pretty much the closest thing I ever read about. But I didn't read a lot of sci-fi back in the day. I was mostly a horror girl. But I remember reading that and going, wow, that's very internet-like.
Right.
But the thing about it, too, and what you were saying about re-editing the video, they did the same thing to Marita Conchita Alonso's character.
That's right.
She worked for the network. She just, like, was a composer. She wrote jingles and shit. And she got
her hands on the original edit.
Yeah, she kind of started to get sympathetic toward Ben Richards and thinking maybe something was up. So she went and looked for the raw footage, and then she found out the truth. And then they put her on the game show, too. Yeah. And the thing that cracked me up about it was that to make her look bad, they were basically like, to make her look like a criminal, she slept with two or three men in the same year.
And I was like,
that dirty whore.
And she goes, stop lying about me. Oh, we're not lying. We never lie. We're going to on TV, we never lie.
Like I said, Richard Dawson is so good in this. He's like so fucking smarmy.
Yeah.
He's just exact. I mean, because he is a game show host and he just like, you know, turned the crank up to like super sleazy game show, because he was already kind of sleazy, I got to admit.
That was kind of his gimmick, though. He was expected to be a slime ball. Back in the 70s and 80s, you could grab some ass. long as you had the right expression on your face and you were famous. Reach down and grab a woman's head. He was getting away with that shit.
Yeah, true.
Celebrities got away with that shit.
They did, yeah.
Yep. They just thought it was funny.
Yeah, I guess. But I was going to say, too, like, the book was actually set in 2025, but I don't know why they changed it to 2019 for the movie.
I don't know.
I guess this movie did kind of okay when it came out. It didn't make a huge amount of money. It cost $20 million to make, and it made $37 million in the theaters. So, you know, it was an okay success. It got pretty much mixed reviews. Some people, like, you know, liked it. Thought it was kind of cheesy, which it was, even at the time. Pretty much Richard Dawson's character got pretty universally praised because they're like, man, look at that motherfucker. He's like perfect casting.
He's pretty good.
But yeah, you know, like I said, if this is one that's kind of forgotten. I mean, I hadn't forgot about it because I saw it a shit ton of times because it was on cable a million times back in the 80s. And I think now that you mention it, I think I might have seen this in the theater too because it was a Stephen King adaptation and I generally would go and see all of those, you know, and I did like this book. I think I read the book before I saw the movie.
The edition of DVDs that I have came with two discs, and one of them was like a regular format. I guess it was something you would watch on an old CRT television, and it looked like crap on my smart TV. But the widescreen version looked pretty good, and that's the best I've seen this movie since the theater. And I had seen it a couple times, like I said, on regular television, CRT television, like on cable or on VHS, and it looked bad. But it looks a lot better in widescreen, in HD. Probably look pretty good on Blu-ray. But there's always going to be limitations in this movie just because of the sets, you know. The sets are not impressive by today's standards. Although they were back then. It, you know, I remember this movie being a big deal to see it in the theater. Like, man, that was a pretty good movie. You know, yeah, big budget movie. You know, that's the way we
looked Well, it was a big budget for the time.
Yeah.
And I mean, like I said, I think a great deal of it took place in the, you know, game show studio.
Yeah.
Or it was shot like outside in the quote unquote game zone, which was just like alleys and shit.
Alleys and factories.
Yeah. So it's like I said, it's not a thing where like Blade Runner, where it has just this whole world that like envelops you
they
in.
They tried.
And they really tried. Yeah.
They so tried.
This one, they, you can tell that they tried to get that, but they didn't really. I mean, like I said, the
they
director.
They did it with matte paintings.
Yeah. The director didn't really have
the budget.
A super artistic eye. Maybe not
the budget.
The budget or, you know, maybe the budget wasn't spent on that.
Yeah, and some of the stuff like the hunter killers, what were they called again?
The stalkers.
Their costumes were kind of cheesy looking, especially Dynamo with all the little Christmas lights. Although Schwarzenegger does, you know, call him a Christmas tree, you know, and then he had a damn plastic mohawk on his helmet to protect his real mohawk underneath.
Yeah,
and,
to protect his real
mohawk. You didn't notice that? He had a real mohawk
I don't
on
know,
his
this
head.
Movie is so
and there's
dark.
A plastic protective mohawk over it. So you
well,
see,
you need to protect,
gotta protect your mohawk.
Yeah.
And he was riding around in this combat vehicle that looked like a VW Bug, kind of cut down. And I remember it being really cool in the day. You look at it now and you just kind of laugh at
it's
it. It's
pretty much like a modified dune buggy
Although
or a golf cart or something.
Some of the motorcycles they showed were still pretty cool. There's a motorcycle that Chainsaw holds up over it, or Buzzsaw holds up over his head and drops it. I still really can't identify that motorcycle. It's got a weird frame. It's some kind of an Enduro. You know, real high tech at the time. When I saw it, I was very impressed with it. You know, like, wow, look at that motorcycle. I see it now. It's some kind of custom job, I think. If somebody
else. Yeah, they probably like kitted it out to make it look futuristic for the movie.
Yeah, and that frame, I don't know if that frame actually came off of a dirt bike. You know, maybe somebody in the audience might know that motorcycle, but the high pipe on it and everything is pretty neat. I saw dirt bikes with the extended swing arms, which was very unusual for that time. You look at it now and you see a lot of extended swing arms.
So can we talk about the weird scene with Dynamo at the end where he pretty much like straight up attempts to rape Maria Conchita Alonso's character?
Well, sometimes that shit's gotta happen.
With his fucking tighty whiteies. He's got like all his Christmas tree shit on the top. And then they pull back at the shot and I'm like, oh no. Look at his underwear.
I remember thinking it was awesome when I saw it at the theater because what it did is it underlined the moral corruption and the moral decay of people. You know what I mean? Like this guy was supposed to be a superstar on television, you know.
He's just like trying
to. He's also just damn rapist.
Yeah, like in singing, a fucking hallway of TV studio.
Singing opera and shit.
With his big fat ass sticking out. It is white, tighty
like
white.
You know, at the time, I just thought it was just, they were just trying to expose kind of like the moral decay of society.
Yeah, I guess so.
That's what they were talking about.
Although, and I want to Meg mentioned too how funny it was when, I mean, Arnold Schwarzenegger pretty much, he kind of breaks into Maria Conchita Alonso. I keep saying that. Her character's name is Amber. So he breaks into Amber's apartment.
Yeah.
Well, he thinks it's his brother's apartment, so he didn't like straight up break in there. But once he gets in there, he pretty much ties her up and then starts going through all her shit.
Yeah, he holds her hostage.
The funniest thing, though, is that she has quote-unquote contraband in her apartment. It's cassette tape! Yeah, she has cassette tapes in her house!
Yeah.
And it's contraband. I'm like, yeah, remember when we had all those cassette tapes in 2019?
Yeah, it's funny.
That's very funny.
Yeah, and he uses web TV to buy a plane ticket.
It's just so funny.
Using her credit card.
Seriously, can we think of an 80s movie that accurately predicted the future?
No.
I can't think of one.
No.
It was almost, it's really sad because all they did was take like 80s technology and be like, let's just do more of that.
Yeah.
But they didn't really go that far. They didn't really, they couldn't take the next step.
You can't even say Alien 1 and Alien 2 were accurate because that was actually in our future still.
Yeah.
And the television screens were still CRT and the cameras were pretty big and it just, they didn't get it right.
Here's the thing, this is
why. It's hard to get the future right.
Yeah.
Especially the
and if you don't have the budget too.
Especially the generation of people that are writing these movies, you know, these are writers. They're not scientists. They don't understand the impact of technology. So once you have internet, there's a lot of other things that become obsolete, you know, like, in Running Man, he orders a plane ticket off of basically web TV. But there's also cable TV going on, and there's also cassette tape. That doesn't all survive side by side past, 1990, maybe.
I mean, even in 87, cassette tapes were kind of on the way out.
So
they should have kind of foreseen.
Because they showed a sneak peek of DVD technology in RoboCop. And RoboCop, I believe, predates Running Man.
Yeah.
Remember that? The bad guy pulls out a CD.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Puts it in a player and it becomes video.
And people back then were probably like,
what? Oh, I remember when I first saw that, we knew about Laserdisc.
True.
So I said it's mini Laserdisc. That's how I interpreted it.
Yeah. Because they did have those. Yeah. I worked in a record store in 1993 and everyone was trying to make Laserdisc happen.
Yeah.
So we had like a rack and it had like three rows of Laserdisc in there.
Yeah.
And the whole time I worked there, nobody ever bought one.
It was so damn expensive.
They were very expensive.
It was way ahead of its time.
And they didn't have like a huge selection of movies. It was pretty much the big famous ones.
And they had it in the 70s, late 70s from what I remember. And the player was probably close to $2,000 in the late 70s. And then a disc was over $100 for a movie. So who would spend money?
Shit, I remember when VHS tapes were like $89.
Yeah, ridiculous.
And when VCRs... Yeah. were like a grand.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I remember that.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago. But yeah, it's like, I don't know. And we talked about this a lot. I said, this is why if I was going to, you know, if somebody gave me several million dollars to make a movie, I would never, ever make a sci-fi movie. Because you can't extrapolate far enough forward. You either have to extrapolate far enough forward that all civilization is crashed and you go back to the caveman days. You can do that. Or you make something that's just like so weird and out there that it's not going to be tied back to something. Because if you just make, like I said, a lot of sci-fi movies that they made in the 80s, they're pretty much just like, well, take a cassette tape but make it bigger or take it, you know what I mean? It's just they didn't really have much of a vision of what the future was going to look like, which is why none of them ever got it right. And, you know, it's going to look dated.
Yeah.
Some of them less than others. You know, I just feel like if you're going to do a sci-fi movie, don't concentrate on technology because it's going to look like shit in like 5 or 10 years.
I'll tell you the most believable portrayal of some kind of a weird futuristic technology is the technology that the engineers have in Prometheus and Alien Covenant, which it's not even digital.
Yeah.
Digital hadn't even occurred to them. It was just some kind of weird analog biology-based technology.
Yeah.
You know, where the ship's just looks like it's grown.
Which I think that was a good choice.
Yeah.
Because you can't, I mean, that's not going to look dated ever.
No.
Well, I don't think so, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, and an image might come down of a bunch of stars and a star map in a room, but you don't really know how it was done.
That's what I mean. You have to have some level of like mysticism to it, is I think the direction you want to go in.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, if you just have, you know, it's going to look like War Games in a couple of years. It's going to be like a little bitty, like Apple IIe or something like that going, ooh, he's hacking into NORAD with his fucking...
Yeah.
This fucking big chunky desktop computer. But yeah, so the same thing happened with this. But, you know, that happens with all 80s movies.
It's all, it's a fun movie anyway.
It is very fun.
The movie is about...
It's cheesy as shit. If you love 80s movies...
It's action-packed. The editing gives a very driving tempo to the movie.
It's pretty fast-paced.
It's one thing after another, and there isn't any downtime in the movie. Really, some of these old movies... I'm getting into old movies. I really like 80s and 90s movies. Some of them are kind of... Some of them drag. Some of them are kind of difficult to watch. You can tell there's a lot of filler in some of them. But not this one. This one moves you along at a good pace, and it's entertaining throughout.
This doesn't really have any...
No. There's no boring in this movie. And unfortunately, some Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, you know, like Raw Deal and Red Heat, did have either boring parts of it or tonal problems in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you were talking about Red Heat the other day.
Red Heat? Well, I liked Red Heat. That could have been a really good movie. It's just that the tone was kind of incorrect. It didn't know if it was going to be a comedy or if it was going to be serious. It tried to do both at the same time. It didn't really work.
I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but I remember not really liking it all that much.
It was a high quality movie. Just like I said, the tone wasn't correct. It could have been re-edited. I think the soundtrack and the editing could have fixed it.
Also, can I say, in The Running Man, there was an actor in this who was a very minor role. I guess he played one of the guys that worked at the TV studio. And the actor's name is Roger Bumpass. I just saw that on the Wikipedia page, and I'm like, oh.
It's got to be a screen name.
But why would you change it to that, unless you were a porn star?
It was just
Roger Bumpass.
I don't know, bumping people's ass.
Pal! I just made a really funny gesture.
You know, these guys were all coming out of the 70s and the 80s, back when a talk show host could grab your wife's ass and could get away with it because he had a drink in his other hand. People in the audience would just think it was funny, you know?
Yep, the good old days.
That's the good old days.
All right, anyway, yeah. So if you're into cheesy 80s action movies like we are, and if you like Arnold Schwarzenegger, then you'll probably like this one. Like I said, it's very, very, very different than the novel. You know, it's a lot more comedic. Novel was a lot more dystopian and dark and all that kind of shit. And like I said, had a much larger scope. But, you know, this is still like a really fun movie. You get to see Jesse the Body Ventura wearing a really cheap, like, robot
it's
armor.
Definitely,
what is that?
Definitely in the top five of Arnold Schwarzenegger's movies. It does have its own quality. You know, you're not talking about Predator or T1 or Conan, you know, but it's good.
Oh, this was written by the same guy that wrote Commando, I think.
Yeah.
Like same Commander. Screenwriter, yeah.
I would put this kind of like on the same level as pretty close to Total Recall, the original.
Yeah, it has a similar kind
about
of vibe.
Like that.
Similar kind of vibe, yeah.
Yeah, before we go, too, I also wanted to mention that due to the response of our 100th episode, we're going to do the news in video.
Yeah, we're going to do like the opening segment and the news. You know how we usually do shout outs and news and everything. We're going to do that in video. I don't want to do the whole show in video.
Because the files are so big. And
because
it's a lot of
work. It's like very labor intensive.
Yeah, and if you had an hour long show, I mean, it becomes a full-time job to do those each week along with the movie reviews. So we're going to mention this again because not everybody watches our movie reviews, but in the next upcoming episode, we're going to mention it again. But to get this done right, we have to get chroma key background, and we always got to get the lighting, and we're going to get a better audio system to try to improve the quality of the show, because we think the channel will grow larger if we at least put the news in video, and to give you guys something to look at so people can kind of make a connection with us, and the channel will grow a bit larger. Once the channel kind of grows and we're talking about, you know, $1,500 a month Patreon, we can actually talk about maybe expanding to multiple shows a week.
Yeah, we have been talking about maybe doing more than one show. I mean, we do two shows a week, obviously, but doing more than that.
We could probably do more than that on other subjects. Now, the reason why we haven't done that so far, of course, is Jenny's main income is books.
And graphic design.
And graphic design. So she's got to get books written. And, you know, you guys like the books too. And the books, once they're written, they make money forever. So books are high priority. But, you know, we can work something out with the time. And once the trilogy is finished for
Faceless Villain,
Faceless Villain, you know, we might be able to expand the show out to some extra stuff. You know, we consider doing kind of like a comedy cooking thing. We, you know, there's a lot of little things that we're thinking about, maybe doing the movie reviews in a different way to where there's more of a video element to the movie reviews.
Yeah, we definitely want to establish more of it. Like, we don't have super great equipment right now.
Yeah.
We are going to start doing little bits of video, like slowly incorporating little bits of video into the regular show. And then over the coming months, we're going to invest in better audio equipment. We're going to get a chroma key background. We're going to get lighting. Better video, you know, better lighting and stuff like that. So just because we had such a good response to our 100th episode, even though, you know, the video was kind of like, you know, just kind of done on the fly.
Yeah, we had to like bump the resolution down because the file was so huge for 3 hours of it. YouTube wouldn't take it.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me upload it.
So you're seeing it pretty bad. It looked a lot better before we reduced the resolution on it.
Yeah, but so that's definitely something that we want to do. And like I said, after this year, when we're getting into 2019, after I finish my Faceless Villain trilogy, which I hope to have done by the end of this year, we definitely want to look into maybe expanding the show out. And we've been throwing around different ideas. Like, the main show is going to stay the same. The movie reviews, you know, we might do some others, just incorporate more video in them and stuff like that. And then maybe we might do another type of show. Like you said, we talked about doing like cooking show or like comedy, more funny type stuff.
Yeah. We know a lot of people. We got a lot of friends that you guys would really enjoy probably meeting. You know, we've even thought about maybe doing board games with everybody there or, you know.
Yeah, or just having guests on, on different shows and on, like,
yeah, you know. Maybe interviews, you know, something. We've been talking, you know, Jenny and I have been discussing this among ourselves for months now of expanding it. But the trilogy has to get done before that because that's going to take up a lot of time. And then we have to see what the response of the trilogy is. And I mean, ideally, if the show generated $2,000 a month Patreon money, we could focus on this a lot more.
Yeah.
Downside of it is that when the show's gone, the money's gone. With books, when you get a book written, it's out there making money forever until you die. So it's like a good retirement program.
So like I said, that's kind of the main priority for the remainder of this year until that trilogy is done.
Another option is whether or not we were just maybe to hire somebody to come in and do all the engineering for the show.
Yeah.
so you can just write a book. If we had a big response, that could be possible.
Yeah.
That way we just record the show
and then you
write
them
books
the
and you give them and they, you know, we have the facilities here to where somebody could just do all the video editing for us, you know, but if you're making 3-4 shows a week, that's a full-time job.
Yeah.
It's a full-time job do editing all that audio and all that video.
But yeah, it's just something that is probably coming in the future.
Yeah, so this is a little bit of bonus content for this video.
But like I said, we could, starting with episode 101, we will be incorporating a little bit of video at the beginning of the show, like just on the news segment stuff. All right, that'll do it for this latest movie review. Remember, if you like the show, to like, share, subscribe, and share on all your social media. Tell all your friends about us. And also, if you'd like to financially support the show, we have a Patreon page at patreon.com/13oclockpodcast, or you can go to our blog, which is 13oclockpodcast.wordpress.com. And there's a link in the sidebar to a PayPal account if you'd like to give a one-time donation. Also, be sure to check out our regular episodes, which come out every Tuesday. Our 100th episode just came out this past Tuesday. It was 3 hours long, so go watch it if you haven't. And our movie reviews come out every Friday. See you next time. Bye.